showed me how to plot my height on a graph in my math lessons, making me work out how tall I would be when I was 13 or 16 or 20 based on the graph's prediction. The real measurements stop at age 11, because after that, Dad wasn't here to measure me anymore. I don't know if our predictions on the graph were right or not. I wonder if Molly would be the kind of person to track my height, if she were here. I wonder what she's doing right now. That night, I dream of Molly, and Dad, and my mother. All three of them hug me, their arms wrapped tightly around me. Their hair touches mine, and I can feel the heat of their skin, warm and comforting. I feel the tension in my muscles drop away. I'm so relieved they're here that tears well up in the corners of my eyes. My mother is the first to leave. She strokes my cheek, and then turns and walks away. I call for her, reach out to try and grab her arm, but she ignores me. She tugs Dad, pulling him away from me before he can even say goodbye. I bury my face in Molly's chest, heaving sobs that have turned cold and sharp and painful. I cling to her, and at first she holds me tight, humming calmly in my ear. Then the astronauts appear and start to surround us. I hold on tighter, but they tug her away from me. I spin around, searching for Molly. I'm in a dark room, and there are eyes in the darkness. I can hear breathing. I can feel warmth on my skin as the astronauts slide past me. I back away, bumping into something soft and sticky and slick. Everywhere I turn, they are coming for me, pressing in closer until I'm surrounded by the stench of their rotting corpses. I duck, trying to escape, but there are too many of them, hundreds and hundreds burying me under their brittle limbs, and I'm alone in my bed. They're peering through the portholes at me. They stare like they want to know why I couldn't save them. Why I didn't help them. Why I'm not good enough. I wake up gasping for breath, shuddering in horror. I thought I'd stopped dreaming about the astronauts. I thought the nightmares had ended years ago. I thought I was free.
Days until the eternity arrives. 358.
It's been 4 days and there still haven't been any emails from Molly. After dinner, I access the detector software to see if a message is being processed, but there's nothing. No laser transmissions have been detected from Earth for over 96 hours. I've never seen it so quiet in my entire life. I chew on the inside of my cheek, worrying at a loose piece of skin. What is going to happen if the DSN antennas don't come back under NASA control? Is it possible that Molly might never be able to send me a message again, just because of politics? I sit on my bunk, twisting my fringe between my fingers. I try to tell myself that Molly will be in touch tomorrow, that there's no need to panic. Whatever political disputes stopped Molly from sending me a message, they happened more than a year and a half ago on Earth. They will definitely be fixed by now. It doesn't help. I curl up in bed and watch Locke and Ness through half-closed eyes, trying to quell the feeling that something terrible is happening. I've got the half-real fear that creeps up on you in the middle of the night, making you think that there's a monster in your room. The kind that makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. But, unlike a monster, it doesn't go away when I pull the duvet over my head. I'm being ridiculous. I know I am. It's just 1 day. What does it matter if Molly doesn't talk to me for 1 day more than she promised? I can look after myself. I don't need her constant reassurance. I'm not a baby anymore. I'm a grown-up now.
Days until the eternity arrives. 357.
I sit and stare at my inbox, eyes glazing over until the screen turns into a blur of blank white space. I tug on the hairs on my arms, pulling them out of my skin one by one, focusing on the tiny sting as each one tears free. I blow on the hair littering the table, watching it scatter across the floor. I wish I could punch something without setting off 4 dozen alarms and an evacuation protocol. Eventually, I decide to open up the flight simulator and practice landing the ship on the new planet to try and get rid of some nervous energy. The program is a 3D orbital gravity model built by NASA and based on the planetary mapping of Earth 2. It simulates the ship's entry into the atmosphere and its descent and landing. I run the simulation twice, bringing the Infinity down gently on a sandy alien hillock, plumes of orange dust curling up around the hull. A tiny simulated astronaut steps out onto the dusty planet, pushing a flag into the ground and raising both hands in the air triumphantly. It's supposed to be me, but I can't ever imagine acting like that. More likely I'd land the ship and then sleep for 3 days while I worked up the courage to even look out of a porthole. The simulation is easy. Apparently, it gets harder and harder, but I haven't put in enough hours to get to the advanced levels yet, when the flight simulator will expand into a planetary exploration system. I'm happy to stick with this for now. I really don't want to learn all the extra things I should be worrying about just yet, like growing crops in uncultured soil, or building houses, or raising farm animals. The thought of landing is more than enough. Plus, the flying simulation really is fun.
Days until the eternity arrives. 355.
Today, I decide I need to do something other than staring at my empty inbox in my pajamas, hair and stomach in knots. Molly always tells me that keeping busy is the best way to stop worrying. Instead, for the last few days, I've been sitting around grinding my teeth in blind despair. I need to push away some of my negative thoughts and just get on with my life. I think I'm going to make jam. First, I need to pick some strawberries from the sunroom, which is part of the science labs. I don't really go in the labs much, unless the computer forces me to do some kind of check. But the sunroom is my favorite exception. It's not really a sunroom. That's just what Dad used to call it, because when I was little I got confused about how photosynthesis and UV radiation worked, and why plants could grow in space. It's actually just a lot of plants in a nutrient solution, sitting under an array of lights. The plants are an ongoing source of seeds to add to the seed bank, ready to grow in the newly created soil of Earth 2. Gardening is also officially endorsed by NASA as being good for astronauts' mental health, which I can confirm. Plants are easy and uncomplicated, in a soothing, reassuring way. They just want light and air, and the containers do a lot of the work adjusting the water and nutrient and aeration levels. I get to enjoy the benefits without the pressure of something else relying on me for survival. The fresh produce is also a bonus. I pick every ripe strawberry I can find, peeling apart frilly-edged leaves to find the juiciest ones hidden underneath the vines, and pinching away dead leaves to make sure all the plants have enough room to grow. My fingers are stained pink by the time I'm done. I have to resist the urge to eat them all there and then. Instead, I eat handfuls of sugar snap peas and radishes and runner beans. The tomatoes are almost turning red, so it shouldn't be long before I can make fresh tomato soup. I think I'll change the light cycle of some containers from summer to autumn. I can harvest the broccoli, maybe the Brussels sprouts. I'm trying to grow some bonsai trees so they'll shed their leaves in the autumn cycle. I've always wanted to see crispy red leaves fall to the ground and try crunching them under my shoes. Neither of my parents were really interested in gardening, so I took responsibility for the sunroom as soon as I was old enough to understand how not to drown the plants. I loved the strange, waxy texture of the leaves, and how plants could be so fragile and strong all at once. It's difficult to imagine the precious organisms spreading across an entire planet without anyone to take care of them. Somehow they survive on mountains and in deserts and underwater without any defenses. I take my harvest back to the kitchen and microwave the strawberries until they're soft and hot, then pour in a whole bag of sugar. I can only find a dessert spoon to stir the mixture with, so I have to keep dropping it when my fingers get too close to the jam and start to burn. The smell of the molten fruit gives me hiccups. I microwave the mixture again, bending over to look through the window at the rolling red liquid. My mouth starts watering just imagining the taste. I try to ignore the hiccups, which won't go away. It's only when the jam is ready that I realize I don't have any jars. I pour the hot liquid into my mugs, lining them up on the worktop, and cut circles out of old food cartons to press down into the surface of each. I'll probably eat it pretty quickly anyway. I can drink from a bowl until then. I lie upside down on the sofa and gulp down water, pinching my nose, but the hiccups persevere. Unable to resist, I eat 4 spoonfuls of jam straight from the mug. It's so hot that I scald my tongue, in a way that means I won't be able to taste anything for days. It gets rid of the hiccups, though. And finally, I feel a little better. I can do this. I can survive alone until Molly finds a way to speak to me again. I believe in her. It won't be long. She won't give up until she's fought everyone who tries to stand between us. She's going to come back to me.
Days until the eternity arrives. 354.
When I check my inbox for messages, it's still empty. Determined to ignore it, I force myself to do some studying. When Dad was alive, we used to spend hours training while he taught me everything that an astronaut could possibly need to know. I was getting quite good for an 11-year-old. Back then, it didn't matter that I didn't know everything, because if there had been an emergency, Dad would have dealt with it. If it was a good day, my mother might have helped too. Now that it really does matter, I find it harder to focus. I pull up some astrophysics problems and read the first question. A twin leaves Earth on a spaceship of mass 3 × 10²⁰ kg, which is traveling at a speed that an Earth-based observer measures to be positive 0.600 c. After the spaceship has been traveling for 8 light-years, the second twin departs Earth in a faster spaceship, traveling at a speed of positive 0.750 c, as measured by an Earth-based observer. According to the theory of special relativity, what is the difference between their ages when they arrive at a planet 27 light-years away from Earth? Immediately, I know what I'm supposed to do. I can barely write fast enough to keep up with my brain, scribbling down time dilation equations and drawing diagrams of the forces, masses, and accelerations involved. I get swept up in the joy of stretching myself, of being able to feel just how clever my brain can be sometimes. When I look at a problem and immediately know what to do, it feels like I'm flying. Sometimes I have dreams about doing math, just because that feeling is so wonderful. But then, as always, I start criticizing myself. A voice in my head tells me that I don't know what I'm doing, that nothing I've written is right. I start panicking that really I'm not clever at all. I know, deep down, that if there was ever an actual emergency where I needed to use this stuff, my mind would go blank. I wouldn't be able to do it. My brain would jam, clogged up with that imaginary pressure and fear. It's been like this ever since Dad died. I just stopped studying. I couldn't, and wouldn't, learn this stuff without him. When NASA found out, Molly was put on my case to restart my training. It's amazing how quickly the advanced astrophysics dropped out of my mind. I'm learning things now that I used to know. Things that Dad made sound so easy to 11-year-old Romy. But now I'm always finding fault with myself. I usually just look up the answer at the end of the textbook. It's frustrating. I'm erasing my failed calculations when a notification in the corner of the screen catches my eye. My heart skips a beat. A message is coming in. I open the program for the detector, unable to resist watching the data packet arrive at the transponder. I need to know, is it from the Eternity or Earth? Please, please let it be Earth. Let it be Molly. The message trickles in, fragments at a time. From NASA Earth, sent 7-2-2065. To the Infinity, received 3-8-2067. Trans, message incomplete. I jiggle my knee, wishing I could hurry it up. Transmissions, message incomplete. I should go and do something while I wait, instead of sitting here watching it, but the scared feeling won't go away. Something important is happening, and I can't make myself look away from the screen. Transmissions postponed. W.A. message incomplete. Transmissions postponed again? R. on Earth. Message incomplete. War on Earth. There's a war happening on Earth? I wait for more, but that's it. That's the whole message. From NASA Earth, sent 7-2-2065, to the Infinity, received 3-8-2067. Transmissions postponed. War on Earth. Molly. How could a war stop her from communicating with me? I wrap my arms around my chest, gnawing at a sore spot on the inside of my cheek where I've torn the skin from chewing at it. It would heal up if I left it alone, but I know I won't. I'll prod and rub at it until it's sore and inflamed. Molly said that international disputes meant that NASA wasn't allowed to use the DSN antennas to communicate with me. If a full-scale war has broken out, it must be stopping NASA from accessing the antennas at all. I'm itching for more information, desperate to know just what is happening on Earth. What kind of war is it? Will there be actual fighting, or is this just a political stalemate? I sit at the helm for hours, staring at the detector and hoping to see even a single letter more. But there's nothing. War has started on Earth, and I've been cut off. What do I do next? I fetch my teddy from my bunk and snuggle my face into his fur, breathing in his familiar scent. My mother made him for me out of an old pillowcase before I was born, to keep her hands busy while Dad was working. My conception was a surprise, or as Dad used to say, a happy accident. NASA hadn't planned for any children to be born until the ship arrived at Earth, too. So there was 20 years' worth of food piled on top of the childcare supplies in the stores. To make sure that I had a crib to sleep in and diapers to wear, Dad had to sift through the endless towers of supplies in the ship's center. Apparently, my mother kept trying to help. He had to make her stop in case she hurt herself. Instead, while Dad excavated the depths of the stores, she spent hours sewing me a teddy bear. The fur's starting to unravel now, but I still love it. However much I hate to think about her, I can't bear to give up my teddy. He's a reminder of the happier times during my childhood. So I keep him, despite everything. I'm still staring into space when another message arrives, this time from the Eternity. For the transmissions to arrive so close together, Commander Shoreditch must have written it as soon as he read the message from Earth. Despite my worrying, I note how nice it is of him to think of me like that. From the Eternity, sent 7/30/2065. To the Infinity, received 3/8/2067. Commander Silvers, I just heard the news from NASA. I'm not going to lie, I'm more than a little worried. Before I left Earth, there were a number of ongoing political tensions, and I knew war was a possibility. But somehow, I still never expected it, or thought that it might affect my mission. I can't really process what's happening. It's like the world has become a completely different place already, only a month after I left. I hope you're okay, Commander Silvers. This is a big thing. It's perfectly natural if you're a bit unnerved. I'm here if you need to talk. I know how much it can help to speak to someone, even if you know there's no reply coming anytime soon. Commander Shoreditch. I'm so tired of being abandoned. Commander Shoreditch's message is reassuring, but it hasn't helped. I'm exhausted in every way. Losing Molly is bringing back the awful feeling of when I lost my parents. Less severe, but exactly the same. It's this horrible drop in my stomach, like when the artificial gravity malfunctions and everything stumbles, tilting sideways momentarily. Love takes so much energy, and it just leads to pain. I think it's probably best for people to be self-sufficient. If I was strong enough to be independent, then I wouldn't be so desperately lonely, I'm sure of it. I just want someone who holds on. Someone who won't ever let me go. Whatever tries to tear us apart. Is that too much to ask? I'll hold you. By the Loneliest Girl. Fandom, Locke and Ness, 2042. Relationship, Lyra Locke, Jaden Ness. Tags, Hurt Comfort, Canon Compliant. Summary, Lyra gets hurt in the field. Author's note. I'm not sure why I'm sending this anymore, when I know Molly won't be able to read it. Jaden, Lyra cried, grabbing onto his arm. It hurts. Tears ran down her cheeks, mixing with the rain. Jaden's hands were pressed against her stomach, trying to quench the flow of blood from the werewolf bite. She could see it trickling between his fingers, staining his skin a red so dark it was almost black.
Lyra! Don't you give up on me, Lyra, not yet! I need you. Just hold on a little longer,
he said, pressing his forehead to hers. It was a circle of heat in the cold numbness spreading through her.
Lyra, I've got you. The ambulance is on its way.
I can't, she gasped.
You can, Lyra,
he said fiercely. Teardrops clung to the tips of his long eyelashes.
You can do anything. You're stronger than you realize. I believe in you, Lyra Locke.
We never even, she said, thinking of all the missed opportunities, the almosts. They had never even kissed, and now she was going to die.
We will,
he said, and she could feel his breath soft against her cheek.
We will. This isn't the end.
Then she heard the sirens and summoned up all her strength. We will, she repeated. Finn.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 346.
From the Infinity, Sent 3/16/2067. 2. The Eternity. Predicted date of receipt, 6/20/2067. Hi, Commander Shoreditch. I hope all is well on the Eternity. I'm writing because I've been going through all the news articles that NASA has sent me over the last 3 years, looking for information about Earth's political climate, and cursing myself for not reading about it more thoroughly in the first place. There's been the usual political tension between countries for months, but nothing that I would expect to become a full-blown war this quickly. Besides which, how could a war even have affected the DSN facilities that NASA uses to communicate with our ships? The telecommunication antennas are located in countries with very strong alliances. The United States, Spain, and Australia. For them to suddenly engage in war doesn't seem feasible. Not as I currently understand it. At the very least, NASA would still have access to the antenna in California. They should be able to send short messages regularly as the Earth rotates and points the antenna in our direction. In the past, NASA has filtered the information they transmit to me, leaving gaps in newspaper articles. I think they censor out any media content with a personal connection to me and the Infinity so I don't get upset. It makes sense that they do the same for news about the war. I think they were trying to stop me from panicking. You have more recent knowledge of Earth's political situation. Please tell me everything that you know, even if your response won't reach me for months. I can't work out how the jigsaw pieces fit together in a way that explains this situation. Romy Silvers. I wonder where Molly is now. I think I'm going to carry on sending her messages every day, along with any fix I write, just in case there's a chance she's reading them. She'd be worried about me if I stopped. I just wish I knew if she's still there. I hope Molly is waiting in the lab for permission to send me messages once the war's died down. What has she been doing while her last message traveled through space toward me? Is she dead?
Days until the Eternity arrives. 338.
I think I've worked out a way to contact Molly. I need to get in touch with someone on Earth besides NASA. Even if they've stopped using their antennas because of the war, there must be someone else picking up signals on some continent, in some other organization. If I can just get a message to them, they might be able to pass it on to Molly somehow. Then she can let me know if she's okay. I find a list of all the government space agencies around the world and track down the coordinates of their antennas, satellites, and space stations orbiting Earth. It's a long shot. Some of the organizations might not exist at all anymore, or might have shut down their operations because of the war too. But I can't just sit here and do nothing. I would never forgive myself if I didn't even try. From the Infinity. Sent 3/24/2067. Predicted date of receipt, 12/5/2068. 2. ESA, ISRO, CNSA, JAXA, RFSA, AEM, APSCO, UKSA, ISA, ASI, KCST, KARI, CNES. Predicted date of receipt, December 5th, 2068. Subject, FAO Dr. Molly Simmons. Urgent. Dear Sir/Madam, this is Commander Romy Silvers, broadcasting from the NASA spacecraft The Infinity. I am transmitting this message to Earth in the hope of reaching someone who is still scanning for signals from deep space. I wish to be put in contact with Dr. Molly Simmons, an employee at NASA who used to be in charge of my communications with Earth. I have received no information about her whereabouts, and since the war started she might have relocated, but I know that she is a trained psychologist and therapist with a degree from Harvard University. Her sister is a general posted at the military base on Antarctica. She has a cat called Nino. If there is any way for you to determine the current location of Dr. Simmons and send her this message, I would be very grateful. I would like to know whether she is safe during the conflict on Earth. I will be forever in your debt if you could grant me this favor. Yours faithfully, Commander R. Silvers. Message to Dr. Molly Simmons as follows. Molly, I really hope you get this message. I'm completely out of other ideas for how to speak to you. I'm so worried about you, and I just can't stand not knowing whether you're safe anymore. Are you okay? Please, please, be okay. I hope your sister is safe, too. I hope she's not fighting in the war, or at least that she's not on the front line. More than anything, I just want to hear from you again. I've been very lucky, as I have Commander Shoreditch of the Eternity to talk to. His support has been incredible. But I miss you so much, it hurts. Stay safe for me. Romy. X. I stay up late writing fic, practicing the piano on the Helm's touchscreen, and basically doing anything possible to avoid going to sleep. I can't have another dream about the astronauts. I can't handle that, not on top of everything else. I've had the nightmares since I was 4, when we lost the astronauts. The sight of hundreds of corpses has been impossible to erase from my mind. I don't really remember a time before the astronauts began to haunt my nights. Dad used to let me sleep in his bunk in those early days when my mother wasn't sleeping at all. When she just stayed in the sick bay, trying and failing to fix what had gone wrong. Some nights, Dad would wake up screaming from nightmares too. I think that made it worse. For everything else that upset me, Dad was there to make it better. A problem with the ship? He knew what to do. A headache or injury? He could fix it. But the astronauts, they scared him too. They scared him more than they did me. They left me petrified. If my incredible, brave, genius father was helpless against them, then what hope did I have? There was nothing to be done back then but wait it out. All 3 of us tried our best. I suppose the lingering nightmares are a small price to pay for what happened to them. I got off lightly, compared with my mother. I wake up shivering at 5 in the morning to find myself still at the helm, my head pillowed on my arms and a fic open on the computer. Line after line of J's fill the page. I must have fallen asleep with my head touching the keyboard, typing Jaden's name. J, 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 J. I delete the letters and go to my bunk.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 330.
From the Eternity. Sent 10-10-2065. To the Infinity. Received 4-1-2067. Commander Silvers, I'm writing because I don't know what else to do anymore. I've spent the last few months wishing and hoping that NASA will get back in touch with us, but it looks like the DSN communications aren't going to be reinstated for a while yet. I'm at a loss. I can't stop thinking about my friends. They're all stuck on Earth in the middle of a war, and I can't even make sure they are safe. I don't know if they are in a war zone or not. Although it's only supposed to be an official communication line for emergencies, I'm really glad I can at least speak with you, Commander Silvers. If you don't mind, I think I might send you more frequent messages from now on. I don't know whether you'll welcome these messages, but seeing as you can't tell me one way or another just yet, I'm going to keep talking to you anyway. Feel free to ignore my chatter or not as you wish. Whatever happens on Earth, At least it won't affect our actual ships. Not even the largest nuclear bombs can stretch this far. I hope. Commander Shoreditch. But you can call me Jay. We might as well drop the formalities at this point, don't you think, Romy? From the Infinity. Sent 4-1-2067. To the Eternity. Predicted date of receipt, 6-30-2067. Jay. I'm so sorry. It never even occurred to me that you wouldn't have heard from your family or friends since the war started. I hope this war ends soon, for your sake more than my own. Of course you can talk to me if it will help you. It would be comforting for me, too. We can be interstellar pen pals. Romy. I keep catching myself gazing into nothing, hands loose at my sides. I've got a horrible feeling that I'm falling into a trap, but I can't work out what kind of trap it could possibly be. I'm sure it's just paranoia. My brain is playing tricks on me, in the same way it always does whenever I see a flicker of light and become certain that there's someone just around the corner, watching me. The war can't hurt me. I'm only a bystander. It's not my problem. Whatever nuclear bombs Commander Shoreditch, Jay, thinks are being let off on Earth, they can't touch me here. My brain doesn't seem to want to listen. I've got that familiar worry about everything going wrong. I need to make sure I'm ready. I need to know how everything on the Infinity works in case there's an emergency. I'm on my own now, at least until the Eternity catches up. If I get ill, there will be no one to help me. No one to fix me if I break. I try to ease my worries by giving myself a medical exam. I take my pulse, my temperature, and my glucose levels using a urine sample. The readouts tell me that I'm fine. I can't quite believe them. I decide to start checking myself every week. I can't get ill. I need to be okay.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 328.
From the Eternity. Sent 10-18-2065. To the Infinity. Received 4-3-2067. Dear Romy, it's harder than I thought it would be to talk to a person who can't reply. I'm not really sure what to write about. I suppose the best place to start, if we are actually going to get to know each other, is to tell you about myself. If nothing else, that should make our first meeting a little less awkward. Here's a short history of Commander Jay Shoreditch. I'm a 22-year-old male. I studied medicine at college. In my second year, I decided that I just couldn't spend another 3 years studying, so I did the obvious thing and applied for a job at NASA. At the time, they were looking for trainee astronauts to prepare for the new mission. I somehow conned my way into the position, probably helped by the fact that the program director was an alumnus of my college. I am perfectly willing to take advantage of my privilege. I'm pretty honored to be chosen, even though my entire job is to grow old in space as a caretaker in the service of humanity. Which brings us up to today, which I spent marathoning an entire season of a TV show. Clearly, I have quite the illustrious career. You're writing back, aren't you? I hope you are. That would make this whole sending messages to a stranger thing a lot less weird. I can't believe you won't read this message for over a year. I feel like I'm talking to the future. Jay. Jay is only 22! That's so much younger than I was expecting. I suppose it makes sense to send out young astronauts so they aren't old by the time we reach Earth 2, but still. 22. That's only a few years older than me. No wonder it's so easy to talk to him. We're peers.
I've never had a peer before. And 22 is close enough to my age that it's not... I mean, it's a bit weird, but... Jaden was only 22 in Series 1 of Locke and Ness when Lyra was 19. That's almost the same age difference as between me and Jay, plus or minus a few years. Okay, 3 years. But still, it's close. Close enough for... I don't even let myself think what for. My body suddenly feels too big for me, too grown up and strong for the young girl inside it. I'm not ready to be this person in this situation. I can't think about this. I refuse. It's enough just to know how old he is for now. Jay is 22, a boy, clever and funny, and best of all, apparently interested in talking to me. It's flattering, in a confusing, lovely way. From the Infinity, sent 4-3-2067. To the Eternity, predicted date of receipt, 7-2-2067. Jay, I'm so glad you finally told me about yourself. I had been wondering who you were. It's amazing that you're only 22 and you're an astronaut. That's so impressive. I'm not really sure what to tell you about myself in return, but here are some facts about me. I've never met anyone who wasn't related to me. I'm never going to see planet Earth. I'm the only person to have ever been born in space. I know you know this one already, but this is the only interesting thing about me. I'm really boring, honestly. I love writing. I can tell you more things I've never done than things I have done. Romy.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 327. Today, in my endless search for every bit of data from Earth that I have saved on my hard drive, I somehow found myself looking through the old security footage from the ship. Recordings from years ago are still archived, stretching all the way back to when I was a baby. From before everything went wrong. I find a clip of Dad in the Infinity's kitchen, feeding me some kind of mashed up food and cooing to me gently. The cameras are in the ceiling, so the angle is too high to see our faces, just the tops of our heads in the corner of the picture. The rest of the shot captures the curve of the clean white wall, the chrome fittings shining in the fluorescent lights. I can tell that I'm happy. My chubby arms wave around, knocking the baby food across my high chair. Dad tips his head back and laughs. I can make out the wrinkles at the corners of his eyes. My heart bumps. He leans over and kisses my forehead before he starts cleaning up. I watch until the door slides open as my mother enters the room and starts talking to Dad. She's smiling. Suddenly, the ache in my throat is gone. Here is my mother, smiling, laughing, joking. This is what my parents' marriage must have been like, when my mother could look at Dad and me without seeing the faces of the astronauts. She looks like a different person, contented and carefree. The recording shows me the mother I might have had if things had been different. I close down the file, feeling worse than I did before.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 322.
From the Eternity, sent 11-7-2065. To the Infinity, received 4-9-2067.
Romy, I've been trying to imagine what kind of messages you're sending me. Presuming that you are and that you're being friendly, I've come up with a few questions you might have asked. So I'm going to answer your hypothetical questions. That way you don't have to wait months for answers. What do you look like? I've got brown hair, and brown eyes, and all of my teeth. I'm 5'9". When's your birthday? In 7 months, 20 days, on June 27th. Hope you got me something nice. What do you think Earth 2 will be like? I have no idea. That seems so far off that I've not even thought about it yet. I like the two suns. I've been running simulations during my training, and it all looks kind of like a giant desert. Speaking of the training, is yours as algebraic as mine? I thought we were supposed to be starting a new civilization, not solving Fermat's last theorem. Before the launch, NASA Earth told me that you've been studying astrophysics since you were 8. That's really impressive, Romy. I can't believe you're only 16 and you're at the same level as I am. You're really cool. Do you miss your family? I don't really have much family. Both of my parents died when I was young. You don't need to tell me that you're sorry or anything. It's not your fault, right? Anyway, it was a long time ago. Though time doesn't really make any difference to pain. It never disappears. I still catch myself making a note of scandalous things to tell my mom. She was a really big gossip. I still remember the smell of my father's cologne. I still get unbelievably angry when I think about how young they were when they died. It's so unfair that preventable things happen to good people just through carelessness. That pain hasn't dulled at all. Anyway, the answer to my self-asked question is that I always miss my family. But that's nothing new. What's your favorite animal? Seals. Whenever I get sad, I watch videos of seals on YouTube. They're basically mermaid dogs, and they are all giant idiots. I love them. What should I do about my miscellaneous illness? Take some penicillin and or vitamins. I told you, I dropped out of college after 2 years. I can't help you much. So, was I close? Are these the questions you've been asking? Was I even in the vicinity of being close? Do you care about my life at all? Jay.
I've got really bad period pains today, so I decide to make a blanket fort. I balance blankets over the top of the lounge area so that the sofa, set into the floor, turns into a tiny, comfy cocoon. The fabric tinges the light a peaceful shade of pink, and I curl up inside my fort and listen to the softest classical music I can find. I reread all of Jay's emails, one after the other, coming back again and again to the description of what he looks like from today's email. Brown hair and eyes, 5'9". I sketch a doodle of how I picture him in my head. He comes out looking like Jaden Ness, with a mess of tight curls on his head and long eyelashes surrounding eyes filled with warmth. He's smiling a bright, brilliant smile, one hand raised in a wave. I carefully tape it to the wall next to my bunk so I can look at it before I go to sleep. With Jay and Jaden to look at, I feel safer, like they're watching over me. From the Infinity, sent 4/9/2067. To the Eternity, predicted date of receipt 7/5/2067. Jay, your last message was like seeing inside my own head. The way you feel about your parents, that's exactly how I feel about mine, too. It's like you've been reading my diary. I don't write a diary, but still. I really am sorry they died, even though you told me not to say that. You don't deserve to have had such a horrible thing happen to you. I can't stop thinking about you being left alone like that. I just want to go back in time and give you the biggest, warmest hug you've ever had. How did they die? Did you decide to apply for the Eternity's mission because of their deaths? You don't have to tell me if it's too raw.
I can't even think about my parents' deaths, let alone talk about them. It feels less real if I don't focus on the details. On a lighter note, happy belated birthday for last year. Ahem. Well, it's the thought that counts. Maybe this message will get to you by your next birthday instead. Happy 23rd/24th/25th birthday. Delete as applicable. You did answer some of the questions I was wondering about. Thank you. That made talking to you with this long delay a bit less frustrating. I have one other question for you. What do you look like? In my head, I keep picturing you like Jaden Ness from Locke and Ness. The way you described yourself sounded a bit like him, and he was studying to be a doctor too before he joined the supernatural police. Plus, Jaden is a Selkie, so he turns into a seal, your favorite animal. Also, I have to admit that I am not the physics genius you've been told. Ever since my parents died, I've been finding it really hard to do any calculations at all. Every time I try, my brain just seizes up. It sounds like maybe you felt the same way when you stopped studying medicine. Did you quit because the pressure made it hard for you to focus? How did you fix that when you joined NASA? I've tried everything, and nothing works. I'd love some tips. R.
Days until the eternity arrives. 319.
Today, the computer alerts me that the annual maintenance tasks for the ship are overdue. Dad and I used to do them together. He would make it into a game, asking me to hand him tools as if I was his assistant. We would do the more simple things first, like recalibrating the thermal management system to the correct temperature for the life support, and cleaning the filters of the thrust boosters. When I got bored and went off to play, he'd do the difficult jobs. We used to carry our lunches with us and take long breaks to eat them, even though it would have taken all of 5 minutes to go back to the kitchen. The ship isn't very large. But Dad said that was missing the point of a good old-fashioned picnic. We would sit on the floor in the corridor and eat sandwiches, sipping lukewarm tea from a thermos. Once, my mother came across us while we were eating our picnic. By the time I was about 9, she tended to keep to herself. I hadn't seen her in weeks. I remember she just looked at us. I could tell she had absolutely no idea what we were doing or why, even though she'd been the one to teach me about the importance of maintaining the ship in the first place, back when we created our model of the Infinity. When she saw us sitting there, she just turned and walked away. Dad stopped talking mid-sentence. I touched his arm, but he looked at me like he'd forgotten what we were doing there, too. That memory hurts. We'd already lost her, and I didn't even know it. When I find myself staring into space, I shake myself and go back to reading through the computer's instructions for the first task. I need to replace a circuit board that is running on lowered efficiency in the sunroom. I use the 3D printer to make a new board and open up the back panel of the UV light. Using a small screwdriver, I swap the old board for the new. A memory I didn't know I had appears in my mind, following my mother around while she changed a circuit board in a door lock. I must have only been 4. I remember tugging on her overalls, begging her to play with me. I remember her grabbing my arms and pulling me away from an open panel. "Don't touch the wires, Romy," she said. "They'll shock you." It's an old memory, so faint that only the physical act of replacing wires manages to bring it to the forefront of my mind. Forcing myself to think of something else instead, I start writing a new fic in my head. I imagine a story where Jaden works in a bookshop. He'd probably wear a Fair Isle sweater vest and those sexy, thick-rimmed glasses that clever characters always seem to wear.
He'd lounge lazily across the counter as he made book recommendations to customers. Everyone who'd come into the bookshop would leave slightly stunned, with the beginnings of a crush. He wouldn't even notice because he'd be too busy pining after the cute girl who would go to the bookshop to buy a romance novel every single Wednesday lunchtime. Jaden would probably change his shifts to make sure he was there when she came in. Once, when she didn't turn up, he panicked and asked all the other customers whether they knew if she was okay. I moved from one job to the next, replacing air filters, cleaning solar panels and telescope lenses, lubricating joints in the boiler and the water recycling unit, then checking the pressure of the liquid oxygen tanks. I don't find any major problems. The ship has been working for years without anything going wrong. I ignore the voice in the back of my head that never leaves, telling me nothing has gone wrong yet. When it does, it will be up to me to notice it. NASA used to monitor the system data, which is regularly transmitted back to Earth. But now the war has started, and there's no one analyzing the data except me. My final task is to remove static from the ship by cleaning up the charged particles of dust that cover each surface. The air filtration automatically picks up most of the dust, but there's always places where it clings determinedly. If the dust built up, the static could cause a fire. So I have to check everywhere myself, just to be safe. I wander around with a duster, getting into all the nooks and crevices of the floors and walls. When I reach the gene bank, I check that the panel on the door is green, which means that everything is fine with the terrible cryopreserved human spawn inside. The room contains 1,000 cryogenically frozen human embryos, eggs, and sperm samples, taken from loads of different countries on Earth before the ship launched. It was supposed to be a secondary source of DNA, to guarantee genetic diversity on Earth, too. Now that the astronauts are gone, the embryos will be the only way that we can establish a colony on Earth, too. Without the samples, this whole journey would be pointless. The embryos will stay in long-term cryogenic storage until the ship gets nearer to Earth, too. Then I'll have to set up an enormous artificial womb in the labs. It will incubate a few of the embryos until they are fully grown babies. There was supposed to be a whole community of astronauts to adopt the children. Instead, I'm going to be responsible for raising an entire generation, to make sure that there are people to work on Earth, too, and make it livable. It has a hospitable atmosphere, oxygen, water, nitrogen, all of the essentials. But we'll still need to build housing and set up agriculture. There'll be a lot to do. I could start off an embryo now and bring up the first baby, if I wanted to. Maybe I would have, if Jay hadn't been sent to save me. Luckily, the Infinity will have joined up with the Eternity long before we need to start caring for children. With any luck, Jay knows how to burp a baby. I'm not exactly qualified. I can barely even look after myself. I'm running the duster along the edges of the floor in the corridor when I find it. It's leaning against the inner edge of the doorframe of the gene bank, tucked neatly up by the wall. It's so tiny that it isn't a surprise I've missed it all these years. It's a shard from some kind of metallic container, a curved fragment of a larger cylinder, broken unevenly along a fracture line. I only notice it at all because the sharp edge catches the side of my thumb. When my fingers touch the roughness of the engraving, I realize immediately what it must be. Slowly, I turn it over to see the letters VERS, M-D. Gasping, I drop it like I've been burned. Dr. Silvers, M-D. It's a fragment of the oxygen tank from my mother's spacesuit. I thought I'd found them all. I had been so careful all those years ago, I never wanted to see any reminder of my mother ever again.
but apparently I missed this shard, lingering at the scene of the crime like evidence waiting to be found. I can taste the sour tang of vomit in the back of my throat. I have to get rid